couple of months ago, my husband and I met with a financial planner. Like, I'm all choked up about it here. Apparently, this is one of the things that you do when you're an adult and you have a child. We had questions and we're trying to figure out plans about our house and our child and, you know, all of that, trying to plan for that completely uncertain future. This was just the right person for us because he came and sat at our kitchen table, and he arrived in a suit and he sat down in the chair, and then he crossed his legs so that his ankle was on his knee, and I could see that he was wearing silly socks. They were kind of crazy stripes and colors. I thought, all right, you're all right. I know, we should not judge people by their socks. He was matter-of-fact about all of it, which was also very helpful, and had figured out a few things that some of our Puritan ancestors had not. Namely, that having money or not having money, or not being able to figure out what to do with or without the money, doesn't mean a thing about your worth as a human. That this is just another one of those things that we figure out together. So we talked about money and plans and worries and all of it, and he seemed to think it was all completely manageable. And I wrote down lots of things on a piece of paper about what we should do and who we should talk to and this and that. And in the midst of it somewhere, he said, and I wrote this down, "Well, it's one or the other, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret." So ever since then, every time I'm groaning about doing something that I don't really feel like doing, I think, oh, this is the pain of discipline. And when I'm sorry in the morning that I didn't pack the lunches the night before because it's a little rushed again, I think, oh, this is the pain of regret. And in many ways, I think the statement just stands for itself in the world and is a useful way of noticing the way the mind is working and the way one is living with whatever is happening. And I think it's useful to think a little bit about what the three big words mean: pain, discipline, and regret. So, pain. What I appreciated about what he said was that in the basic structure of his statement, he meant that, you know what, whatever you're doing is probably going to be a little bit painful. No matter which way you turn, there's going to be part of it that's painful. And that part could sound a little bit grim, but I think it's actually very refreshing to have someone say this, especially in a very matter-of-fact tone and wearing silly socks. Because I think a lot of us humans think that if we just got it lined up right, if we just followed the rules in a certain way or did things a certain way or were disciplined enough, that we would achieve this sense of, oh, now everything is smooth and easy. Now it won't be painful anymore. And the way he said it made it clear, no, being disciplined enough just means experiencing that particular kind of pain more often. It's a way of acknowledging that to continue to be present can be painful. This week I was visiting someone in the hospital who was very ill. So the discipline this week was to not run ahead and try to guess what was going to happen next, or to try to guess what we would do when whatever did happen happened. The discipline was to be present for the moment. And it turns out that that itself is very painful sometimes. It means acknowledging that you don't know. To some extent, you don't know what is happening. It also means acknowledging that most of the time we have absolutely no control over what is happening and what is just about to happen. We just have to be there. And that's a hard one to give up, that you can plan and arrange things and know what will be next. I say that in context of having met with a financial planner and talked about decades of planning. Not making plans is just as difficult as making plans. It's hard to stay with the discipline of not putting yourself out into an unguessable future, to just stay with what is. When I was a teenager, I discovered that my father kept a file in his desk with a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan written out. Some of you got to hear my father preach, so that may not surprise you about him. And on his plan, of course, were various events in my life, which had not yet occurred. But they were planned out, to the month, some of them. And as a teenager, I got a little cranky about it, because I was in that phase of, I wanted my life to be my own. I didn't want him writing down, May 1993, graduate college. Well, of course, that is what happened. But I wanted the future to be open. And as I got older and graduated in the exact month that he planned for me to graduate, I realized that if you're going to make plans, the sound just disappeared, didn't it? I say it's the weather. Thank you, Lisa. She's looking puzzled. Well, let's see. This is an unplanned moment. We get to practice not knowing what is happening. Wow. Did that work? Yep. It worked. I want to know how you knew that was the next thing to try, but that's another moment. We'll figure out how you figure out what's happening in the present tense. So as I grew older, I understood that we live in this balance of planning and there is no plan, and constantly moving back and forth between those two anxious things. And realizing that in some ways that teenage refusal, don't write me into your plans, has a thread of the truth. That it is uncontrollable, that future that we are all growing into. And that we do risk run the risk of missing what is happening if we are too focused on a particular plan for the future. So I have come to believe that making a plan makes it easier to improvise. That if you've thought it through and it's not going that way, then you have a foundation for going off in the other direction. So that planning and responding to the moment are woven together all the time. So that there is a discipline to learning to respond to what's unfolding. I'm a little ahead of myself, though. I have one more thing to say about pain, which is to go back to what the Buddhists say about it. Sometimes the first tenet of Buddhism is described as, or translated as, life is suffering. And I always thought that was a little grim. And then I found another translation, which is, life is inherently unsatisfactory. And I really like that version because it has a sense that just sometimes hard to get quite settled. It's not as profound and stunning as life is suffering, but it gives that sense that it's hard to be in the moment and not in the future, that we're always wrestling with being where we are and letting it be just like it is instead of trying to get it to be something else. And the Buddhists are very interested in settling into the beautiful moment that is unfolding and noticing that it is sweet to be alive. Okay, so with a little bit of sweet to be alive, we'll talk about discipline. And of course, I like to talk about John Calvin. But only because he's one of our direct ancestors when it comes to thinking about things like discipline. Because those of you who grew up in a tradition other than Protestantism know that almost every tradition has a line about discipline and rigor that can be difficult. That discipline can sound a lot like punishment in a whole bunch of traditions. Often when we talk about disciplining children, we are talking about some version of punishment for their behavior. And I think in this statement that our financial planner gave us, that it's either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. The word discipline means something much more like choose which key you are going to play your piece of music in. My husband calls this setting a policy for your life. It just means making decisions about what you are going to do, how you're going to go about your days, and then living by those decisions. Yes, it's all of those decisions that we make in January. Eat kale, exercise, don't spend money that you don't have, say thank you whenever possible. And I think that discipline that's available in this statement that I've been turning over in my mind is something a little bigger. I got to watch a TED Talk by Shonda Rhimes recently, and she has some interesting things to say about this practice of discipline, both the pain and the gifts. Now, if you don't know who Shonda Rhimes is, she is a writer and a producer of a number of television shows, maybe 8 or 10. And I think several of them are running right now. Perhaps some of you have watched one of them this week. So she is writing stories all the time, creating characters in her mind all the time, figuring out how to turn those stories in her mind into something that people around the world can watch. So she has this astonishing creativity happening. And she's an African-American woman, which means that she is pushing against some significant cultural headwinds to do this. In her talk, she talks about how much she loves her work, how she loves the hum of getting all of that creativity and possibility going and going out into the world. And then she hit, as many people do, a moment when it wasn't quite working for her anymore. So she started to try things, experiment in her life. And so she took on the discipline for a year of her life. She said yes to everything. That possibility makes me feel a little dizzy. But that is the key that she decided to live her life in for a year. And then she wrote a book about it. Have any of you read her book about saying yes for a year? If I get to read it this summer and have inspirations, I will let you know. So something happened from that discipline that she did not expect. She has three children, and one day she was headed out the door. She was late, and her youngest daughter said, "Will you play with me?" And there she was. She had decided she was going to say yes to everything. So she said yes. She got right down with her daughter, and they played. She says that the children will only play with you for about 15 minutes before they get distracted and go on to something else. That is not my experience. So saying yes to that is usually a pretty big commitment. But she said yes, because that was her discipline for the year, to say yes. And at this point, she confessed to the TED audience that she's not very good at playing. And I had thought, as a person who's spinning stories all the time, that she would love to play. She doesn't really, she likes to go to work and think and not throw balls and play kitchen and be in the childhood part of play. So this was hard for her. This was the pain of discipline. Because not only did she have to do something that she felt incredibly awkward doing, but she had to face the fact that although she had three children and loved having a home life, she really discovered that she preferred to be at work. She didn't like to be in the messiness of childhood play. But she said yes to it. And she said yes to it over and over again. And it was awkward over and over again. Painful over and over again. And in that pushing herself into play, she found that there was another kind of creativity, and that under that play and creativity with her children, awkward as it was, there was this other kind of love and connection available that she hadn't felt before. She hadn't really known it until she made herself say yes every time. And she said that brought back a hum and creativity in her life that renewed her sense of the meaning of her work and changed her sense of the meaning of her life, opened it from just the work that she had been so focused on to the other relationships in the world. And we hear this story from people all the time, that they figure out that there's a bigger world of love. And it is amazing every time to hear how people get there, what disciplines they put into their living so that they can encounter that pain of what makes it hard to be connected. So I recommend her TED Talk to you. I'm learning these days that asking people to read a book is sometimes just too much. But a TED Talk or a podcast can really be a way to just get that contact, that gem of wisdom. So I think it's called My Year of Saying Yes, Shonda Rhimes. Because there are other layers of insight when you get to hear the story directly from her. She is just a gorgeous example of a woman finding her great strength when she allowed herself to be vulnerable. But that's one of the other threads I've been following this year. And I want to pick up one more stitch on this pain, discipline, and regret project. So there's also regret. That one's fairly self-explanatory, I think. But I think it's useful to notice that it's really about longing for the past to be different than it is. and that that, in some essential way, is not possible. That there's only this moment that we're in now, and only in this moment can we change the way we encounter things. But living with the longing for something that's over to be different is a pretty terrible pain. And it often carries a sense of blame or even shame that things are not as they should be and it's somehow my fault. And that does pick up that thread I've been following all year about shame being the fear of not being worthy of connection. And I have found in my life that the things that I regret are almost always the moments when I, unawarely, frequently, was trying to avoid pain. My pain or someone else's. And that, of course, the pain is not avoidable. It just moves around. Try to sidestep it here and it pops up again. So that's the discipline that I try to keep now. If I can notice that I'm trying to sidestep some pain, to step back toward it. That's the pain of discipline. Try not to have the pain of regret. And mostly, I think we go about our lives wishing that we were more skilled at maintaining the pain of discipline and avoiding the pain of regret. And there are multiple times a day, at least for me, when I fail at that, get to the end of the day and think, oh, that's the pain of regret. That's the pain of regret again. So I have a number of ways that I work on that. But one of the ones that I would like us to think about together is how much our tradition of being Unitarian Universalists invites us into that pain of discipline. Because we talk about the inherent worth and dignity of all people. And we're trying to be very public about acting on the side of love. Acting on behalf of a great big love. That we are doing our darndest to really stand up for that in the world. And we miss. And we get confused. And we get anxious and we have blind spots. But we keep pointing ourselves toward that love. And that includes each of us. And so if we are in fact going to live into that great big love in the world, it means that we have to honor our own lives. We have to honor our own living in this world with that kind of love. And so when we get to those moments of, am I going to go for the pain of discipline, of confronting what's hard? I invite you to get Unitarian Universalism on your side, to know that it's backing you up, to honor your life, to treat your living, your choices, as important parts of this great life that is unfolding. That you have been given a gift also. The gift of life in this moment. And to honor that gift that you received, that you certainly didn't even ask for and just got, to honor it means leaning into that pain of discipline, the things that we want for ourselves that are hard to stick with. But leaning into that, knowing that you're part of a tradition that believes in a great big love means that you get to be part of this life that has that hum, that creativity, that possibility, that new storylines, that love unfolding that you hadn't felt before. We'll listen for that hum together.